Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. We're talking about scenarios where you might know that things like the MTBF are very bad metrics to use when it comes to reliability, but your clients and customers still love them.
So I don't know if they love them. They're just using it. I'm not going to give them that much credit.
I think they love them.
Okay. Yeah.
They love the simplicity of them.
Yeah, that's true. And the question I got that prompted this thought was, you know, we're making progress internal to the company to use reliability relate, you know, terms like probability of failure in 5 years type stuff, you know, whatever the details are. Yet the company still wants to use MTBF. And when asked why, they said, but that's how we've done it for the last 10 years. And so she says, she's not going to fight that. She's okay to keep them both. And her strategy is to show making decisions using reliability versus MTBF may change your decisions and may lead to faulty decisions. So she's looking for opportunities to say, I told you so. But her gist of her follow-on comments and questions was, it's our main customers that are doing two things. They're requiring that we report what's the MTBF of our system and do specific tests that we do different sets of modeling and testing and which is much more sophisticated, more accurate, yet they require and I'll use the term loosely, a demonstration test. And they want that. And I asked her, this isn't in a standard, is it? And she goes, no, that's just what they always want. It doesn't make much sense. The procurement or the sales organizations really doesn't want me to talk to them about changing their requirements. They got the sale, they get what they want. Like, okay. What do you do when your customers are putting on requirements that technically don't make much sense?
Sometimes you just need to cry, get it out of your system.
Yeah, unfortunately. Or
what you can do is go create a website called No MTBF and
hope for the best.
Treat that as a cathartic, penetrative experience.
Oh, I bet you that has improved my mental health significantly over the last 20 years. Because yeah. I run into a situation like this and I go write an article for it. I got close to 250 articles there.
Right. And I mean, there's lots of things you can do. One thing is, in this case, it was Rochelle was mentioning how I wasn't able to approach the client, but because the sales team was running interference because got the sale, don't want to, like, as you said.
Don't rock the boat there, yeah.
But just put that to one side for 1 minute. Usually, once you explain to people what the MTBF is and what it does, and they take the time to listen, they realize that demanding the MTBF actually costs them money because it's not reliability. It's a number which might have something to do with how many things are going to fail if about 65 assumptions hold true or you know what it is. But unfortunately, it's the reality is it's unlikely for that to ever be the case. So you can talk to clients about, hey, if you talk about the MTBF, don't even pretend to, one, get on top of preventive maintenance schedules or servicing schedules. Two, don't even pretend you have any idea about what your warranty reliability will be. Three, don't even think about understanding what the effect of predictive maintenance or condition monitoring will have. Four, just stop thinking you can compare one component to another component from a different vendors and have any certainty that the one you select will actually be more reliable if you use the MTBF, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Especially when you can demonstrate room to save money by not having to buy something with an exorbitant MTBF because that's what the matrix says so.
I think tying it to money and its use and all of the various issues of it, what I find is that it people that really just, that's all they want to do, is that they've got 38 other measures, you know, signal strength and lag timing and signal integrity and the weight of the system. And is it compliant with this standard or that standard or this regulation or that regulation? There's a laundry list of things that go into more complex products to in that client-buyer relationship, and saying, well, the MTBF is really not helping you make a good decision. And they look at you like, is it reliable or not? Yeah. But they say reliability is important. That's why it's in there. Okay. The trouble is you got to be part of that conversation. And that's not always the easiest part, to say, well, when you say reliable, does that mean no failures in 5 years or a very small chance of failures in 5 years or something else? And usually I get something that just good reason why I have this outlet of no MTBF.com is they'll say, we want an MTBF of 50,000 hours so that we have absolutely no failures on average for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, let's do a little bit of math here. If just making all the assumptions you want, and they still don't get it. Now, that's a failure-free period. And I'm like, no, it's not. And when it's a measure like that, and our product is, you know, borderline reliability for it, they got the sale because they had a 50,000 hour MTBF on it. Like, at some point I just got to shut up, but it's the inside a company. Yet at some point I have to tell the director or the VP or somebody that they're going to be back in about 6 months saying they haven't too many failures. And it's not a big market. They all talk to each other. We need to actually make a product that has no failures in 5 years or very close to no failures in 5 years, because that's what they expect. If we ship this product, we're going to have 60%+ of our products are going to fail by 5 years, if they even let them on this, keep them on the system for that long. And at that point, some people start to pay attention. Now, if I happen to have decent reliability information about our product from internal testing and modeling and so on, then I can show them the probability distribution and saying, here's what we expect it to do. It's a little bit better than 60% failing up to that time frame, but it's not much better than that. Just happens to have the same MTBF as 50,000 hours. It just baffles me. Well, it's a whole soapbox I'm trying to stay off of. But the idea is that what do you do when a customer requires it? And I think, yeah, a good cry in the car home is part of it, but it's also send them both. You know, it's what my standard answers is, send them the cumulative, the CDF plot
showing, yeah, that's
good, you know, and with a short explanation how to interpret it. And here's the MTBF number. It's one dot on that plot, you know, for reference. Here's the whole curve and here's what you wanted. It's right here. You got a little bit more with your ice cream today. But the idea is that you can show both. And hopefully that sparks a handful of discussions that then, oh, how do I use this? And this makes more sense or stuff like that. And then you can work with them to make the improvement. So even if it's in just internal measures and metrics, is do both. You know, if we're already using better methods to do reliability estimates and modeling and testing and so on, use the results of those and don't dumb it down to one number. Use both.
Yeah. I mean, you could also start getting into the habit of communicating with your clients saying, hey, demonstrate the MTBF is 1 million billion hours, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then in a big, and I love visuals, especially in reports. Mm-hmm. And so often if there's something I want to notice, to denote, or if it's like a repetitive theme, so you could say, well, based on their assessment, this implies there'll be a 40% chance of failure in the first 6 years.
Yeah.
Or whatever it means real world.
Right. Oh, I did that with one company and the senior director looked at me and goes, well, that sounds pretty bad. I like, mm-hmm. you know, 50 billion hour MTBF. That sounds better. It's exactly the same thing. is and here's your field data from the your previous product that had a similar MTBF value, and you had 40% failures in 2 years. You know, like, oh, well, I thought we'd do better than that. Set the MTBF higher. No.
Yeah. I think it starts with education, because your own organization, as a rule, doesn't want to rock the boat. And I think that that's a good little tidbit that was thrown our way as part of this conundrum, that the salespeople ran interference, didn't want to rock the boat. That's a stock standard behavior, especially when you've had made the deal.
Sales closed already, yeah. The trouble is the sales guys are generally not the ones answering the complaints when their products fail. It's customer service and quality teams and field service people and sales guys off to the next sale.
But it's also short-sighted too, because we all know, I mean, we've been through that scenario where we might have, you know, especially in small towns, when you have a plumber who's usually a little bit more expensive than anybody else. And that's great. And so a lot of business goes to the other people until something goes wrong. And the plumber who's a little bit more expensive than anybody else, because he uses premium tools and premium equipment and doesn't rush the job, so he spends a little bit more time on site. Mm-hmm. He's the one, or she's the one, who never has a problem. And if they do, they're at your front door fixing it before you can say, holy cow, everything's wet.
Yeah.
And once that happens, you have a client for life. So there's a reason they charge a bit more, but beyond all the premium equipment, it's just that more people want them to be used. I have an electrician that I use in town, and he is just OCD good, if that makes sense. He is like a monkey, the ability for him to crawl on the ceilings and everything else. He is high energy. He doesn't want to do a bad job. He'll say, look, the job I did yesterday, I'm not happy with it. I want to come back and just, you know, improve this. And you go, all right, no worries. I'll leave the door unlocked, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And everyone knows this. And he is so sought after. He's so busy. He doesn't advertise. He doesn't need to do anything. It's just him. Because everyone knows that if you deal with Sal, it's going to be done right. Yeah. And if there's any problem, he is mortified and will come back middle of the night if he has to resolve it. I don't even, you know, he is that guy. And yeah. I'd say the same thing applies to virtually every person as a potential customer to an electrician, and the clients to the organization in question who are demanding the MTBF. If you become known as the only supplier who took the time to explain the MTBF and said, look, we're concerned about what this actually means, we want to help you. You know what?
But do you really want 40% failures this year? No. Is that your plan? It's like, no. Well, that's what you specified. Well, make it better. Okay. I know what you mean. It's a brand reputation, and it starts one engagement at a time, one discussion at a time, one product that meets the customer's expectations, not just their requirements. Yeah, I've run into some where it's a different model altogether, but equally ludicrous. But the idea is that within the organization, and she's working as a reliability engineer and is making progress, is getting teams to at least have reliability measures or objectives and requirements on their systems. That's great. Getting it out, dealing with the vendor's requirements, yeah, it's trickier. There's more politics involved and all the other stuff. But the benefit is just as you're saying, you want to be Sal. You want it to be not just the reliability requirement, all the requirements need to be consistent with getting them what they want. And you know, highlighting and discussing through the ones that just don't make that much sense. I had one company that they wanted us to do this test, and it was a little more sophisticated, but not by much. Throw a few units in a chamber and heat them up for a week, and then if they pass, they're all good. The trouble is that the temperature and humidity in this chamber was fine for an encapsulated integrated circuit. But our product was the integrated circuit unpackaged. And they're buying the chip, and they would send it to a packaging house to be packaged. But one of their requirements was take your bare chip and put it in a temperature humidity chamber and see if it survives. And we wrote back to him saying, called him, talked to him, had him in for a meeting, and told him over and over again, it will fail very, very quickly. It's exposed chip to humidity and temperature, and you want it powered, it will fail. There's no doubt in our mind. There's no way we can pass that test unless it's encapsulated. And that's not what you're buying from us. You're telling us to do it on a bare chip. It took months to get them to believe that we were right. And they did a test. They said, we're not going to waste a bunch of money doing this. We're going to take two of them, put them in there, and say, we expect this and this and this to fail. And they did, within about an hour. And here's the pictures. Here's the dendritic growth. Here's the corrosion. Here's all the other stuff. And they still, you got to pass this test. We can't. It's physically impossible. It was amazing to me to do that. And so I think at the end of the day, they finally convinced him of it with the handful of samples. And he said, look, we don't want to just burn our products up just because you have this requirement. We're not going to sell it to you if you have to pass this test. It was kind of the CEO's final ultimatum to him. But we do this on all our products. And like, well, you need to actually think a little bit. I think it ended up being a veiled comment to him at one point.
Well, it's just like testing a bulletproof vest by wearing the bulletproof vest, you know, having the test subject, a real human wearing a bulletproof vest while someone shoots a bullet at you without the bulletproof vest.
You came up with a graphic image there, but yeah, it's you know, yeah, when you don't wear it, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's amazing how that.
It's amazing how that works. But yeah, I had one example. I got a call, and I probably told this story before, but this one of the divisions in the company gave me a call and said, you know, can you do a parts count prediction? I says, I never have. I kind of don't think they're very useful. And he said, yeah, we know they're not useful. We make a tape drive. The dominant thing that fails is the read-write head. It's a little piece of glass that the tape rides over in order to maintain the spacing between the tape and the sensor. And that glass wears, and we know per foot of tape running over it, how much wear it goes. And so if you run 8 million feet of tape over it, it's worn off too much and it's no good anymore. You got to replace it. And they had a beautiful model for it. They had tons of information on it. They really knew that was a dominant failure. That's how they designed and built their systems. That's what they focused on. Everything else was in the noise on how this product worked. And probably not the best euphemism for a tape recorder, but I think you get the idea. It was a tape memory system. Mm-hmm. And he said, we don't have time to learn how to do a parts count prediction and buy it and stuff. Well, I just happened to get a demo copy of it, and I wasn't planning on doing anything. Well, I'll take a look at it. And I got, I don't know, 5-10 minutes into it, and I went down and talked to my, you know, mentor at the time, and I said, this doesn't make any sense at all. Why do people use this stuff? And he goes, well, it's often a condition of sale. It's just added to the purchase order that it's a requirement. And all they're going to do is check it off at the end of the day. So just work yourself through it and print out a nice report and give them a number. They'll check it off their list and we'll never hear of it again. Okay. And in the process, I don't remember what package it was, but one of the lines was highlighted in red. And I'm like, whoa, why is it doing that? And it turned out that the software signaled that this one component is probably overheated. Is in its use, it will overheat. And so I called, it was Mohammed, who's the reliability engineer in this division. I called him and says, can you check on component XYZ here with an IR camera when you've got it running? This software I'm using is saying that that part might be overheating. And he called back 20 minutes later and says, how'd you know that? So we actually found something useful out of the prediction. It wasn't used for anything to relate to how long the product would last or any of the other stuff. That was all done different ways, but it was a requirement. So I find some irrational requests can actually turn into being useful in some form or fashion. Not what either party intended at all, but somebody wants a test. Is there a way to either run the test longer or do something different with that test so that we can not waste our time with it as much? But those are about the only responses I could give to this question is, what do you do? You do the best you can with it. And sometimes you just got to do it. It's kind of the summary of it. I don't know. Any other thoughts on that one, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, so I'll be part of it as well. You just got to give them a number. And often especially in the military, where it's just, you haven't got a chance of changing clause in a contract where you've had 64 admirals and generals in the photo shoot with 16 other old white guys in suits. Mm-hmm. Shaking hands. When you say, hey team, let's just look at the clauses in section 3 of appendix A to this agreement. I don't know if you noticed, but they don't make any sense. They don't care. So you gotta go through and fill in the numbers and do that FAMICA worksheet or whatever it is, and it's a struggle, and you have to bite your tongue or create a website.
Pick your battles. And one piece of final advice is that if you, raise the concerns about MTBF and should use reliability or convince a customer to do it and so on. And here's the perils. If we meet their requirements, let's say it's XYZ and we know that they're going to have more failures than they want, but that's all they want to hear about. Really bite your tongue when it comes true, your dire predictions or the mistaken decision that was made based on a bad metric, is you got to remember to not say I told you so. Just take advantage of it and help people learn why it happened and here's the, what we can do different. But really don't say I told you so, unless you really trust somebody you're talking to. Usually it doesn't go well.
Or you are down that organization and looking for an out.
I think the job market's a little bit different case than it was during the great resignation during the pandemic. People were jumping jobs like, just crazy. I think it slowed down quite a bit, but that's a subject for a whole other episode or two. But it was a part of a question, how do I deal with it? We're making progress, but what do we do with, vendor requirements and stuff like that? A few ideas there, but not always the best of ones. Opportunities, I guess, would be the best term for it. But if you've got a question or if you're facing a dilemma of some sort, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Chris and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages on Ascendo. So plenty of ways for you to get in touch with us. Yeah, I really tried, Chris, to stay off my soapbox on MTBF. I don't know if I did. I think I did all right. I didn't rant too much on it.
You've had bigger.
Yeah. I should follow up those episodes and just republicize them or something. But anyway, I'll stop thinking about it hopefully for the rest of the day and get on with the rest of what I need to do. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Always a pleasure, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.